Let me just tell you why ISEC is interesting for us and who we are. Obviously, as Marco mentioned, we build in building and outdoor systems. But more importantly, one of the things we do is we have one of the largest air-to-ground systems in the world with GoGo. We also have a whole bunch of private networks customers deep through small cells. So these are some of the areas where, you know, we see quite a lot of applications for ISAC. Obviously, we also have ORU portfolio in a traditional MNO sense, and we actually use we plan to use ISAC for that as well. Of course, and then we also have our partnership with DeepSig, my esteemed colleague that you've heard before earlier on as well. Okay, so let's go into some of the core crux of what we want from ORAN. So I think one of the key problems in ISAC that we want to solve with ORAN is the architecture. That's the key enabler. We're not looking for ORAN to solve the technical aspects of it in terms of how we go do detection, you know, how we do tracking. We're really trying to solve it. ORAN is that. So when we talk about ORAN, so obviously one of the good things is that ISEC has moved out of research, and you saw from a number of our colleagues here that ISEC has actually, there's a lot of proof of concept that's been discussed. You know, obviously, it's as you've also heard, it's actually come out of 3GPP. It's still being discussed to a certain extent in a very slow fashion, but it's moving forward. But one of the things a disaggregated network like ORAN has trouble that a traditional radar doesn't have is that because it's disaggregated, the question of where does sensing becomes pertinent, right? Is it in the OCU? Is it in the ODU? In the ORU? You know, that's one of the questions. What interfaces do we use to send control data and, you know, control and data signals, right? And then the other one is, of course, how do you do the two different modalities, which I'll go into, for passive and active sensing. So there's a number of aspects of sensing that needs to be addressed in the architecture itself. And that's the thread I'm going to be pulling on in the next few minutes, right? There's another aspect which I think a few of my colleagues here touched on as well, is that there is a, from a standards point of view as well, you'll see as well, there's a very, a mental model that ISAC is all about monostatic models. But I think what is much more natural for what any radar guy would tell you, we're all radar armchair experts here, but you know, what a real radar guy will tell you is, you know, ISAC is naturally multi-static. If you want to, you know, in the way it's actually being used by the militaries and the way it's being used by many others for active sensing, but there's many other applications for it. Monostatic has its place, but as you'll see later on, active, you know, the geometry actually becomes kind of very critical. Okay, so another aspect when we talk about the architecture is we need to consider the domains in which ORAN actually, you know, falls in. So this, I categorize it in generally four areas, which are going to be pertinent for ISAC as well. So the defense industry obviously has drone detection that we've constantly heard about. Public safety has it for search and rescue aspects. And then you have commercial, both private networks as well as in the MNO spaces for different applications as well. So when we look at the architecture for ISAC, I think what's again very important is having an architecture that actually addresses all four domains, right? So we can't have an architecture where the actual market, you know, you're actually setting the ISAC model for each market. You really want it across the board. Now, there's, of course, the passive sensing, which spans across all of them because of the very nature of passive sensing. We'll talk about that in the next slide as well. But what you'll notice here is that in many cases, you know, in the way in which sensing actually works is that it actually uses, in many cases, multi-static to actually effectively work. And in some cases, you know, there are some critical constraints as well within that domain. So for example, with the defense, they can afford to have very high power, but an MNO trying to do ISAC cannot use very high power transmitters. And, you know, we talked about energy saving modes here earlier on. I'll talk about, you know, how that could be exploited actually in an ISAC environment. Okay, so when we think about fundamentally ISACs, there are two modalities for ISAC. There's the passive RF classification as well as the active ISAC. So essentially in the case of the passive, you're essentially looking for an emitter. What is emitting? And in the case of active ISAC, what you're doing is looking at what reflects, and then that's what you're trying to capture. So one tries to address what it is, and the other tries to address where it is. These are two distinct modalities, but they can be fused together to actually be of a lot of value. So for example, if you're tracking a interferer that is moving, I've heard of folks finding jammers on boats. And if you're trying to track something like that, you could fuse the passive RF classification, find the emitter, find the jammer, and then use the active ISAC to actually locate it. Of course, you could also use passive RF classification. If it's, for example, a rogue UE, you could actually simply use the passive RF classification to actually detect the UE. And then, of course, you could use positioning to locate the UE as well, right? But they have different parameters in terms of how they operate. Passive RF classification can be done in milliseconds and traditionally falls somewhere in the DU side. But the active sensing, this is where we're looking at what object reflects. The detection itself requires sub-millisecond like performance. So essentially the targets are slightly different. Like I said, if it's passive, you can actually, for example, a drone, you could detect some drones that are emitting, for example, drones controlled by Wi-Fi. You could use passive emitters to actually, passive classification to actually determine where those drones are or that there is a drone. But the active drones, active ISAC looks for silent, reflective, objects essentially. So there, when you look at again the architecture, so as I was talking about earlier on, so there are these two modalities as well that we'll have to factor in when it comes to the architecture, both passive and active. But then there are three realities that you'd also have to factor in when you think about how to design the architecture for ORAN. And so let's start with the first reality, which is coverage. I think, like I said, if you look at a traditional radar, these are very high-powered radar. That's not what an MNO type of operator or a private networks guy has. It's a very low power. And so there are two panels there. If you look at on the left panel there, that's a single node, fairly low coverage. And you can't actually simply increase the power out there because the physics pretty much punishes you 4-to-1 in terms of any kind of detection there. So if you look at the right panel, it's the same target, the same power, and the same integration time as well. But what are you doing there is you're now changing the geometry. And really what you're doing is you're using, obviously you have different transmitters that are illuminating the target, but you also now separate the transmitters and the receiver. This is the true multi-static nature where you use the different receivers to actually detect the object. And now you can actually increase the coverage area when you actually take, by changing the geometry in this way. So this is what I mean by, in the case of ISAC, coverage is determined by geometry, not power, right? So that is one of the realities. So that, again, is an important consideration when you think about architecture, because you have to fuse multiple receivers to actually, determine where a target is. So when you think about, for example, if you ask a military guy and ask him, hey, how far do I need to detect a drone? Many of the demos that have been shown, publicly at least, a lot of the drone detections was sub-1 kilometers. When you talk to a military guy, he'll tell you that's useless. I need to see the drone 5 kilometers away. So to do something like that, in an ISAC in a real network, you actually need to change your geometry to something that is multi-static. You need multiple receivers, and you you can actually make it much more energy efficient now as well, because depending on the way you've actually created the geometry, and this is where the RIC is also very, very good at coordinating this, you can actually determine based on the first reflection what are the other receivers you need to light up. Okay, so that makes it also, again, very efficient and from an energy perspective point of view. Now, of course, you can ask me, but hey, receivers consume a lot of power, right? Actually, in the whole ISAC, if you split it into three, and I'll talk about it in the latency as well. So if you think about ISAC or any kind of radar-based detection, there's three parts to it. There's the detection piece, there is the tracking, and then there is the classification. What really takes the compute power and energy is really the classification. The detection, which is done in the radio typically, is actually quite efficient. So if you have a lot of low-cost receivers, and like I said, if you use that geometry, you can actually detect a lot of things from much, much further away. So again, this is what some of the considerations for architecture. The second reality is bandwidth. So I heard a lot of people talk about this, about moving IQ data. And I think there were some questions related to that as well. But the practical reality is, if you look at, let's say 64T64R, if you took the 64T64R massive MIMO product, massive MIMO unit with 100 megahertz of bandwidth, and you were to move the raw IQ data out of that from the front hall, any radio guy will tell you it's like, nearly 300 gigabits of data that you're actually moving. Gigabits of data, because we're talking about data rate here, so it's not gigabytes. But a traditional front haul today moves, for communication purpose, moves about 14 gigs. So it'll fit in a nice 25 gig, SFP. So practically speaking, you can't just take raw IQ data and just pass it on down the line. It's, not very efficient. Even dark fiber, as you can see here, cannot, you can't fit all that into even a dark fiber. But what is much more efficient from an architecture perspective is to do the detection of the radio and then transfer point clouds, some parameters that you can actually provide detection lists, tracks, things like that further down. And that's like about 5 megabits of data rate. So this, a magnitude of 5 that you're actually saving by just sending that data. So you can still have innovation in ISAC, even if you do it this way. So you're sending a bare minimum of data further down the line to the DU. But now you have, the next problem also that we have to solve is latency. So now you have bandwidth solved. You're detecting things fast. You're sending a selected list of point cloud data. Point cloud being, it's a radar terminology. Essentially, it's, a set of spatial 3D XYZ points. And then, you're sending a bit of data. Basically, what you're doing is you're capturing something and you're passing it on to the DU to say, hey, look, there is something in this data that might be of interest. You might want to track it and classify it as well, right? The third reality is latency. Like I said, there are some things you have to do fast. And where you place something depends on the loop you're trying to close, right? So the speed at which you're trying to close that loop determines where you put that. So detection, it needs to be very, very done very, very fast. It's a hard real-time problem, and it's best done in the radio as a result. And then the second thing is tracking. Tracking is done in, it needs to be done in milliseconds, and that could be done, of course, in the DU sort of area. And then, what is the purpose of the RIC? Well, the RIC is the best place to do a lot of the coordination, and it can fuse data as well. Fuse, not confuse, but fuse data. But nonetheless, like I said, when I talk about the architecture later, we'll look at, obviously we're spreading the problem further in the architecture, but you can actually, in a private network sense, actually fuse all of this into a single box, right? Okay, so these are the three realities which, an architecture really has to consider quickly. So what I have here, in the interest of time, I won't go through it line by line, but in this table, what I showed you earlier on is broken into where are the best locations you could actually do it, looking at the two modalities I talked about, passive and active as well. So you can see, for example, in the case of active, the main echo capture and the waveform generation, all of that is actually being done in the ORU. And you can see, let me just also pull another case of OCU. That's another case where we can actually say, for example, if you were to do session management and session control and you needed to go further up the chain, you would actually do that data in OCU, which is how the standard defines it today. So let's look at quickly what does that mean from the grand scheme of things in terms of the proposed architecture. So you have ORAN as it is today. We'll go into specifically what needs to change specifically in ORAN, but the way I've split this up is that the most hard real-time problems are done in the ORU. The ODU has some of has the best compute, so as a result it actually does some of the high compute things like classification and tracking as well. So that means the RU just keeps sending all these point clouds, detected point clouds, to the DU. The DU can actually start tracking it. And then the RIC can actually start forming, okay, this object is moving this way, right? And the OCU and the sensing function's job is really more to do with talking to further up the network. So if you're doing sensing as a service, the OCU and the sensing function are the ones that actually take care of that. So the way to look at this from a radar perspective is that your radar controller is out there doing in the ORU and the ODU along with the RIC. And then your sensing function is really the front desk receptionist that is actually figuring out, okay, picking up the customers. So that could be, for example, the defense customer or, whoever else needs that service and then provides that service further up that. So that's actually a function that sits in the core as a result. Okay, so one of my last slides here, but so what does that exactly mean in terms of what do we need from the ORAN to actually solve this problem, right? So the way I've set this up is that I think we're trying to solve the easier problem first. So if you look at the user plane, today the user plane is set up pretty much very much for comms. What I'm suggesting is you just need a container now for sensing. And that's where you actually store all the point cloud data between the radio and the DU in this case. C-plane, again, C-plane is primarily structured for, comms. And this is where you could actually have some parameters to do things like what waveforms to do, specifically for sensing, what waveforms to use, should it be an NR, should it be an OFDS one? And then you could also have the M-plane where you describe the capabilities of the radio. So we would also need some changes there to do that as well. So a Yang model that has a sensing module or a sensing Yang module to help describe the capabilities of the radio, right? So these are some of the specific changes. Now, controversially, one of the things I'm saying here is because I think ORAN will make a meal out of it, meaning we'll never get any of the sensing standard out on time, is don't worry about the synchronization initially. Do the sensing as non-coherent, and then eventually, obviously, you'll have to do coherent sensing, in which case, at that point, synchronization is absolutely critical. And a lot of people talked about, that aspects earlier on today. But I think, what that means is when you actually start doing sensing here, you do GPS disciplined oscillator to actually start doing that sensing. And so therefore, you don't have to worry about it again initially. It's just like what we did in the 3GPP standard. We never did joined, coherent multi. When we did multi-TRP in 3GPP, we did it non-coherent. And then we introduced coherent joint transmission. So I think that's the same way we're proposing this as well. And this becomes much more practical. We can get things out, a lot sooner. In fact, we could probably do that thanks to AI, you could actually do that sometime this year as well, right? So this is a much more practical way in which sensing can be enabled. You can now have a very innovative model for sensing as well. Okay, so that's all I had.